Hello again and welcome from me, Jenny Devitt, to Local World, supported by the Gardens Group here on Abbey 104 Radio. Just one item in today's programme, a very remarkable and intrepid young Dorset woman who made what most of us would think of as a crazy and potentially dangerous trip all the way to distant Mongolia, pretty much 7,000 kilometres as the crow flies. She didn't do what the rest of us would do, hop on a plane. No, she went in 2015 on a not very new little Vespa called Gretel, after one of the Von Trapp children in Sound of Music. She went via Turkey, the various countries ending in Stan, and finally Mongolia. And she came back, just very recently, via Siberia, with a small rescue dog. Emma Trenchard is a portrait artist and could have been leading a quiet life in rural Dorset, but no, not her. You will hear Emma, her parents Claire and Johnny, and her mechanic Clive Thorner. Emma told me why she'd wanted to go quite so far by herself on a modest little Vespa.
I think just the adventure, the idea of it was exciting, just thrilling to set off on two wheels. I'd just finished university, so for the first time ever, really, I could go further than Croatia. So I'd been on a couple of trips around Europe on Gretel before, and every time I'd get down to a really nice island in Croatia, and I'd get a text, you know, uni had begun, had to get back for the course and things. So when I finished that was the first time I was sort of free to go. Been to India a couple of times and absolutely adore it. So always had this idea to drive overland.
And had you ridden a bike before you did your Indian adventure?
No, never.
And so when and where did you acquire Gretel then?
I got Gretel in London. I had a tiny budget. My budget was it was about 650 quid, I think. It's pretty much all I had. I was determined to get my own vehicle. I had a few too many bumps and bruises on my parents' cars. So, yeah, I looked on the internet and, just found this little pistachio green Vespa for £700 a couple of stops from where I was staying. And, hopped on the metro to go and get her. So I went to Paris for a party and then ended up going all the way around, really. I went off to Poland then to see a friend there, down through the Czech Republic, Austria, over the Grossglockner Alpine Pass, which is absolutely stunning. I had a couple of topples on that first trip on roundabouts. Vespas are quite, because the scooters I'd ridden generally have bigger wheels. Gretels are just so minuscule that she's not very balanced at all. So twice on a roundabout, I toppled over, so I learned quite quick not to lean too much.
You've obviously got this this wanderlust in your blood. Where does it stem from?
I think it's quite firmly wedged there, probably from birth, but it probably helps having quite adventurous parents, or at least quite open-minded parents. Dad travelled a lot when he was younger. Mum's not so much into that kind of thing, but typical mad artist and very encouraging. So I think it's always been in me, to be honest. I've always, since I was sort of very young, going off, exploring, climbing trees, sort of, I love the thrill. I love the unknown, the sort of the adrenaline rush.
The what's over the next hill or
yeah,
the next
quite.
End.
And where will you sleep and where will you be? Who will you meet? I'm never very good at the routine, which is why school never worked out so well.
And never afraid of the unknown, what might happen, what
well,
might go
possibly
wrong.
The reason it's so exciting is because it's a little scary. So I wouldn't say I'm afraid of it, but the fact that there's an element of risk there is, you know, quite exciting. It makes it all more real.
I did have kittens. I was completely terrified. I thought the whole thing was absolutely mad. And I did tell Em that several times. But she said, no, it's really quite easy. Everybody does it. And I said, but what about Gretel? She's not going to get even beyond Brighton. And she said, well, if she can go around Milan several times in a circle, just put them all out in one long line, and no reason why she can't get to India. So with that logic, what could you do? We just had to go with it. But I was terrified. I had complete worry fatigue by the end of the first week.
India was the original plan, all the way up until I got to Kyrgyzstan. And then I was saving up for the crossing through China, because to get to India, my plan was to go down the Karakoram Highway, which is a stunning sort of Himalayan pass that goes from Kyrgyzstan through China, Pakistan, and into India. And to get through China with your own vehicle, it's a real nightmare. It's just really expensive. You have to have a guide, and you have to get sort of Chinese number plate, and you have to take a lesson, and the cost just mounts up. And I didn't have it. When I set off, I had very little. And so I knew I'd have to stop and work somewhere before I crossed China. So I applied for a job in Bishkek, in the capital of Kyrgyzstan, and got offered a job to teach art. So I was there for a while, didn't last that long at that job, and then looked for a new one and got offered one in Mongolia. So that's where the plan sort of changed.
So India suddenly turned into Mongolia then, a bit different.
Well, yeah, I mean, the plan was actually still going to be India. By this point, by the time that I was searching for a new job, it was almost November, and I knew that to get across Mongolia was going to be a bit tricky because, you know, it's minus 40 in the winter, and winter was just starting. In the end, I decided I'd try it. I thought it was going to be a real challenge, but I thought, right, we'll go for it, and I'll drive Gretel in the winter to Mongolia from Bishkek. But I think it was a relief to everyone. I ended up getting mugged the day before, so I got my Russian visa, got everything ready for the drive, and I ended up getting mugged. And stupidly...
Where was that?
This was in Bishkek.
In Bishkek, yeah. In Kyrgyzstan.
Yes, yeah. Stupidly, I had everything in one bag because I was ready to go, really. Sort of having a party with some friends in a hostel, sort of celebrating finally leaving Bishkek, where I'd been for a while. And then, yeah, everything gone, passport, driving license, all the cash that the school had paid me, pretty much everything. I had to fly home on an emergency travel document, get a new passport, by which point the job I'd already accepted in Mongolia had begun. I was really late for it, so in the end I flew to Mongolia to do the job with the aim of working over the winter, flying back to pick up Gretel and continuing on to India. So just doing the job over the winter to earn the money.
And then still heading to India. But
where was
Gretel in all
I left Gretel time? With... I was staying in this... it's called Warm Showers. It's really a place for cyclists. It's free. And it's people that just let out their houses for cyclists. And since Gretel's sort of a glorified bicycle, they allowed her. And I'd been staying there for quite a long time in the end. And so they agreed to look after her over the winter for me. And then it changed. I met an English accountant out in Mongolia and decided to go back instead. So, yeah, that's where it all changed, so, and India was no longer.
But Emma, let's backtrack. You sound incredibly matter-of-fact about what was a quite incredible journey, because here you are, a young single woman, and you set off by yourself on your little Vespa called Gretel, pretty much, not quite into the unknown, but on an incredibly long journey.
Yes.
Did it ever cross your mind that this might be a slightly risky thing for a young, pretty, single woman to do?
Risky a little, but just the idea of it was so thrilling. I mean, just to set off and so, no, it wasn't so risky that it made me nervous. It was probably nervous excitement, really.
It was an adventure.
Think. Yeah, quite.
But did you find, actually, that... traveling by yourself, you know, on the contrary, instead of people, particularly men, obviously taking advantage of you, that people kind of took pity on you and wanted to make sure you were all right?
Yeah, absolutely. I entirely put myself in the hands of the locals everywhere, because I'm not a mechanic. When I set off, I had no idea where my battery was, no spare tools.
You knew where the ignition was.
No spare parts. I knew where that was, and that was about it. I had to call Dad to ask him how to check my oil at one point.
That's what makes it equally amazing. She literally probably knew how to check the oil level. That was it. Since she's come back, I've noticed she knows a little bit more about her bike. So she's learnt a lot along the way. But nope, she left with no more knowledge than the average person who buys a vehicle. None at all. Amazing.
I think she was on a rapid learning curve. But the real learning didn't, I think, start till she'd got there. Because she was fortunate enough to bump into one or two kind other people along the way who knew more about mechanics than her. But certainly by the time she returned from Ulaanbaatar through Russia, and indeed, while she was out in Ulaanbaatar, she was much more clued up as to the workings of the internal combustion engine than she had been at the outset.
So I knew nothing, so I was really in the hands of everyone else, and they were just fantastic everywhere. Incredibly hospitable. Loads of them would invite me to stay for the night. Everyone, when they saw me sort of stuck halfway through a river, if there was anyone around, would come and haul me out. And people were great.
But of course, your journey wasn't exactly trouble-free, now, was it?
No, absolutely not.
In Istanbul, you had a rather nasty accident. How did that happen?
Yeah, that was fairly horrific. I got to Turkey, so for the trip all the way until Mongolia, I didn't have any sat nav or anything. I just had one big map.
But you had your phone and a laptop with you, did you?
I had a laptop. But, you know, when you're on the road, obviously, you're not going to have internet. But my phone was just a little Nokia. And so so I didn't have a map, you know, like I do now, which is nice. But
so you had a big paper map.
I had a huge paper map. So Istanbul was just a dot. And so when I got to Istanbul, I was trying to find this hostel that I wanted to stay in. I was getting horrifically lost, and I kept having to stop and ask directions, and then I asked these two guys. I was around the airports on the motorways, sort of the ring roads, and I asked these two guys. They didn't speak English, and they sort of gestured like this, sort of a curved, you know, gesture. And I took the wrong road. I later noticed there were two roads that went like this, but I took the wrong one, and sort of, you know, quite happily speeding quite fast around a corner, and suddenly, I don't know, the lights must have changed, and four lanes of traffic came around the corner that obviously I couldn't have seen. We were going around all these loops, and suddenly realized I was on a one-way system, and went headlong into this van that was also coming around the corner. So that was fairly bad. I fell off to the side. Gretel was basically under the van. The road had to be cut off, ambulance came, stretchers. Gretel was taken to... I remember looking up, I fell off the bike. I was in real shock, because I had that 1 second before you see what's about to happen, and I saw there wasn't any way to turn. I had a wall on one side and another car in the other lane, and just it was quite a jolt. And when I sort of arose, someone was kind of taking my helmet off, and I looked and I saw Gretel and just smoke, oil all over the road. Just Gretel was kind of smashed, and I was thinking, oh no. And then they took me off in a stretcher, and all I could think about asking was if someone could look after Gretel. Somebody took my bags away, somebody took Gretel away, and I was taken off to hospital in this ambulance. And anyway, they took me off and they said, is there anything you want to ask in the ambulance? One of the nurses spoke some English, and I said, well, do you know if it's possible to buy a horse or a camel in Istanbul? All I could really think about was how to carry on the trip. She looked quite sort of surprised, and I heard no answer from that. But anyway, I was taken in, and it was this awful state hospital, everyone yelling in Turkish, and I was left on the trolley, told someone would come, and sort of... And yeah, I can't remember, I sort of hobbled off my trolley and tried to find someone, and in the end, this 14-year-old boy with a broken arm in this big sling found me a wheelchair, so he was wheeling me around the hospital trying to find someone to look at my leg. In the end, I got really fed up. I wanted to know where my bike was. No one seemed to know where the bike was, where my bags were. And so I walked out the hospital, and there was a policeman waiting who wanted what do you have to do after a crash? He wanted a statement. And one of the police officers was really, really nice, and he said, look, I'll help you find the bike. And we went off to this scrapyard, and Gretel was there, sort of with other vehicles that had all been kind of crushed and destroyed. And he helped me find this mechanic that amazingly said he could do her up, and that it would only take that evening or something like that, or a day or two. I couldn't believe it, because I'd been told she was a write-off, and, you know, I was wondering how the trip was going to carry on. I was fine. I hadn't broken anything. I just had sort of legs like puffer fish, really.
That was really probably the worst time. There was a very tearful phone call from the hospital in Istanbul. I don't remember, I've come off the bike and it's all disastrous. And my heart was just banging away. So after that, things got better. Well, it just kind of went on from there. And after that, we kind of relaxed into it a little bit. And I'd warned her about Turkish people and said, you know, you must be really careful. And of course, never having been to Turkey, I knew all about Turkish people. So do be careful. Anyway, it was really quite sweet. When she got through Turkey, we Skyped, and she said, you know, you're quite wrong about Turkish men, Mama. They're absolutely charming. And all the families had taken her in. So she'd knock on a door, sort of at twilight, and say, could I camp in your orchard? And they'd say, look at this, they'd look at this little waif, and they'd say, look, come into the house. And she'd go, and they'd look after her and feed her and send her off on her way. We both thought, this is terribly dangerous. That was the worst thing. We just thought it was dangerous. We thought she'd be abducted, kidnapped, raped, all the worst things. So we were really, we kind of settled into the journey as it went along. And we realised that she was incredibly good at looking after herself. And she just seemed to be in total charge.
So that was really good.
Off you went then from Istanbul.
I was there for about 10 days in the end. I had to get a couple of visas for, I think, one for Azerbaijan or one for Georgia, something like that. And so I was waiting around both for visas and for Gretel. And then as soon as that was all done, off down the Black Sea coastline, which was stunning.
So from Istanbul... You went to...
From Istanbul, I followed the Black Sea coastline all the way up until Georgia. So I had about a week across Turkey. And I think all week, I think every night was spent with families that invited me in. At one point, I found this amazing little cove. I went down this little path hoping to find a place to camp. And there was this beautiful cove there with a little cafe on the water's edge. And three guys were there. There was one man about in his 90s, always puffing at a cigarette, brilliant face, perfect victim for drawing. Mother and I, we call them victims, people with very good faces to draw. He was there, then a kind of fatherly figure, and then a young chap. And so, yeah, they just took me under their wing, and I stayed with them for about 5 days in the end. And they had this little pink paddle boat, and we'd paddle off into the Black Sea at starlight, and they'd cook up fresh fish every evening on the house and play music, and... that was a real highlight.
And then, okay, so from the Black Sea, where did you, once you'd left Turkey, which country did you then go into?
From Turkey, I went into
Georgia. You avoided Iran then?
I avoided Iran, yeah. I went into Georgia. Yes, that was interesting. I was trying to find a hostel on my first night in Georgia, which ended up being a prostitute hovel. I was quite surprised when I was offered £100 to go off with a certain bloke. I thought we were just all sitting, having a nice time. It transpired not. And that was the first city. And then I moved on quite swiftly after that to Tbilisi, at which point the zoo broke out. And so... the zoo broke out. It was actually on the day I left, so I didn't see much of it. It was on the news. There was a big flood, and the zoo got out, so there were sort of lions... you know, running down the streets and tigers on the roofs. And so, yeah, made quite a swift getaway from Georgia altogether and went into Azerbaijan and onto Baku, its capital, where the European Games were going on. So I arrived in Baku, and my cousin lives in Baku.
And this is what, autumn 2015? Or summer?
I left in April. It was probably June. So, yeah, went to stay with my cousin. And I didn't actually know that the European Games had just started. And it was quite funny. So the British ambassador, my cousin went to a party. I had some connection with the ambassador who got to hear about my trip. He wanted to do a story on it, but he wanted to twist it round so that Gretel and I had travelled from London to Baku to support Britain in the European Games. Then I felt that I really had to go and watch some games, so I went and watched their water polo.
You didn't disillusion him then?
No, he knew very well I hadn't come to watch the games, but as it was great to see them.
And then, you left Baku behind?
Left Baku behind. It was all a bit touch and go in Baku.
And were you still travelling by yourself at this stage?
Oh, yes, yeah, I was. It was a bit touch and go in Baku because I had a transit visa, which is only 5 days. And if you overrun a transit visa, you get sort of exported from the country. And I was hoping I'd be able to extend it. But the thing is, I had to wait for a cargo ship to cross the Caspian Sea to Kazakhstan. And there was no knowing when the cargo ship would go. It just went when it was full. And 4 days had gone by and I thought, oh God, I'm going to have to try and extend my visa. So I went to the embassy to try and extend it. And they said, that's not possible. You have to pay this much if you haven't left by, you know, sort of tomorrow, 8 a.m. You have to pay this much and then you've got 24 hours to leave the country. And I thought, oh, crikey. And luckily, I got a call from my cousin who was helping me out with the finding out when the cargo ship was going. And it was heading off that evening, so I was told to get to the port straight away. And so I zoomed there thinking the boat was about to leave, and then we were sort of there for about 10 hours waiting for these big trains to be loaded up and things, and got on the boat, which took 2 days, got on the ship. It's not really like the ferry from Dover to Calais. You kind of got to strap your bikes in with whatever you've got to the sides of kind of trains. So the crossing was great. It was quite surreal. I remember when I was researching about the trip at home and working out my route, and I was thinking about this cargo ship and how I'd get across the Caspian Sea, and to actually be out in the middle of the ocean just with nothing there on your way to Kazakhstan. It was, really thrilling feeling.
I'm sure I haven't got them in the right order. You went through Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan,
Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and then Kyrgyzstan.
And then you had to go through, at one point you had to go through the Pamirs, didn't you?
That was absolutely
kind of
breathtaking.
The top part of Afghanistan, nowhere near a war zone.
No. Yeah, that was absolutely stunning, Pamir Highway. It's sort of cushioned between the Hindu Kush, the Karakoram and the Himalayas mountain ranges. And it's the second highest motorable pass in the world. So it goes up to 4,700 metres. And it's just absolutely, that was the definite highlight of the trip. It was just breathtaking and quite scary because there'd been really, really bad flooding and awful landslides, and everything was just flooded, and it was really difficult to cross. So you get on the Pamir Highway, and then there's a little loop called the Wakhan Corridor, which is that one that borders Afghanistan. And the original plan was to go on it because it sounded amazing, this kind of rubble path. And you see Afghanistan on one side of the river and you're in Tajikistan, but at one point the two towns link. I just started the Pamir Highway before you can take the Wakhan Corridor. I met lots of people that had just been up it, said there's no way in hell you can take a Vespa down there, you won't get through it. So I was sort of in two minds about whether to go for it, because I had a 30-day visa for Tajikistan without many days left on it. And in the end, I had to do it, which I was quite pleased about, really. The choice decision was made for me because there was a huge flood and the Pamir, part of the road on the Pamir Highway got completely flooded, so pedestrians could cross in boats, but no vehicles could get across. So I went down the Wakhan, which was just so exhilarating. It took a while. In some ways, Gretel was one of the best vehicles to be down there. I remember we got to this, I got to this bad mudslide at one point, and people had been camping on either side of it. They'd been waiting for a couple of days for diggers to try and build a sort of bridge across. And I was thinking, well, I can't hang around because my visa was about to go. So I thought, right, I'm really going to try and get Gretel over this. A whole load of local kids helped, and one Swiss man that I met who was travelling on a motorbike as well. And we all hauled Gretel over the mountain, so the landslide was at the bottom, and we took her over the cliff, over the rubble. So we had about 10 people, all the local kids. Oh, it was just so funny. When I look back, I've got some video footage of it. And we're trying to, you know, we're building her bridges out of stones, and everyone's sort of really seriously trying to work out a route. And when we got her down the other side, she came down to sort of a massive applause from everyone, because everyone had been waiting and watching this Vespa being carried basically over the mountain. And Gretel was the only vehicle that really could cross because she was so light and small. But that was a relief, because if we dropped her, she'd have tumbled down. It was a very sheer cliff. We were trying to, you know, maneuver her over. And so I think she'd have been in a bit of a state.
You met with quite incredible kindness, didn't you, Emma? All the way
absolutely,
along.
Absolutely, yeah.
People who, men who fixed Gretel for
you. Oh, yes,
you,
yeah.
And all sorts
yeah,
of things. Most, who accompanied you, went out of their way to help
yes,
you.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a sort of slight issue, is a horrible word, but I'll use it in this case. This is a slight issue between Em and I, and that is that, yes, I did think that the whole thing was extraordinarily dangerous, and I did think that there was a very good chance that it would end in tears, and I was put in a position where I said, I'll eat my hat if you get to... the first stop, of course, was Kyrgyzstan back in 2015, where she temporarily resided before going on to Ulaanbaatar the following year. But I said, I'll eat my hat if you get there. And, of course, she did get there. And we had a ceremonial eating of a hat when she... a homemade hat made with pizza dough, I seem to remember, when she got back and visited us briefly that winter. But
that does seem slightly cheating. I think yes. You should have eaten a felt hat.
Yes, absolutely.
You made it to Mongolia. Did you get to the job on time?
Well, because I flew for that first job, but no, I was already about a month late, having got a new passport after the mugging, and I did about 7 months there. Flew back to get Gretel, and then set off for Mongolia again, but on the bike, which was also, I think, the sort of the second highlight of the trip. Really, that trip to Mongolia was really fantastic. It took a while to get going. After the winter, Gretel wasn't on great form when I reached her. And twice I tried to set off. I got, I think, in all about 3 Russian visas, none of which I used. So the first time I'd got mugged. The second time I got a Russian visa and I just crossed the border from Kyrgyzstan into Kazakhstan. The route to Mongolia was from Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, over the Altai Mountains in Russia and then into Western Mongolia. And yeah, I just got over the Kazakh border and Gretel just made this huge explosive noise, and that was that. Couldn't start, so I wheeled her back across the border to this mechanic I knew in Kyrgyzstan, in Bishkek, that I'd got to know quite well. Really lovely chap, and he fixed her up again. The same thing happened about 2 days later, and Gretel's engine was basically just out for the count, and so we tried.
Well, how many kilometers had she done by this time?
Well, she'd done all the way from here to Kyrgyzstan, so I think that was about 10,000. Or what was it? It was 16,000 all the way, so probably about 11,000 without any trouble.
And,
so,
but you know, 11,000 kilometres, a lot of it on really rough terrain. I mean, not kind roads.
Things started to get very iffy when I reached Tajikistan. I remember being towed for the first time, having to hitchhike to get to mechanics, and it was getting quite frustrating. Finally, there was just this huge explosion just before I reached Bishkek. And in the end, a friend that I'd met, actually in the desert in Uzbekistan, who was originally riding a bicycle, he ended up traveling with me for a bit, ditched his bicycle, bought a motorbike. And so luckily he was with me when the explosion happened, and towed me from his bike to into the city to meet my school secretary, that looked quite surprised because they're a bit concerned that I wasn't flying in anyway. They asked me, you know, when my flight was arriving, and I hadn't wanted to sound too mad on my interview so that I'd get the job. So I didn't tell them I was coming by Vespa for quite a long time. And then arrived finally by tow rope, being towed by this sort of crazy Welsh guy. And they had to tow me to my apartment and all sorts. And anyway, after that, Gretel was never really the same. We tried to fix it with Chinese parts because they have no Vespa parts out there, you know, in the stands. And so eventually, after a lot of breakdowns trying to get to Russia, I ordered a secondhand engine off eBay, and Clive, my mechanic in Bridport, cleaned it up for me and sent out the pieces I needed to Kazakhstan. So I waited around a lot in Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, had a great time in the end, met 2 really nice Slovakian men who were driving bikes from 1952 and also about to go to Mongolia. So we all joined up, and they waited for Gretel to get fixed up with the new engine parts.
We had the email from, I think she had a chap she called Igor out there, who stripped the engine, found out he needed some parts.
Whereabouts was this?
I think she was in Kazakhstan at the time. So her dad purchased an engine. I stripped the relevant parts. We boxed it and flew it out to wherever it was. And that was it. She was very happy. It got put together and she carried on her journey.
We only touched on the Gobi Desert. We did a sort of zigzag through Mongolia. So we touched on the Gobi Desert and then we went up into more mountainous areas. I think that if you take just the Gobi, I think the road is quite dull. It's all sort of all the same. So we had a bit of variation. Sorry, what did you say?
Endless desert.
Yes, yeah, and just sort of endless sort of washboard road, you know, where trucks have made ridges. And on a Vespa, it's really, really annoying. It's the worst. You've got no suspension. You've got nothing. So it's
rattle the poor bike pieces.
Yeah.
I think at this point we ought to say hello to Molly, because
not
long after you got to Ulaanbaatar, capital of Mongolia, you adopted a rescue dog, little Molly. Where is she now?
Yes, she is.
She's gone out. She's gone outside to chase sheep.
Molly! Hello, Douglas. Hello, come along. Come in here.
Now, she is just lovely. Hello, Molly. Now, Molly is what... have a genuine Mongolian dog. She looks like a small border collie.
Yeah, exactly what I thought.
Is she a recognised Mongolian breed?
No, not at all. She's a real oddball, actually. I've never seen another dog like her in Mongolia or here, actually. But, yeah, I thought she was a sort of miniature collie mixed with something small and Chinese to have this crazy tail.
And small enough to fit on your lap.
Yeah, I think Chinese dog collie mixed with a tiny bit of spaniel, possibly. But yes, well, there you go. I adopted her, not long after I arrived, actually. But Molly, stop it.
Because the remarkable thing about Molly is that not only did you adopt this rescue dog, but you brought her back this summer all the way from Mongolia on your bike.
Yes, yeah, well, I couldn't leave her behind, really. When I got her, she'd been rescued from the street by this organisation called Lucky Paws. I was looking to adopt, but I didn't know I'd be driving back here. So how to move with Molly when I did, I had no idea about, because I assumed I was going to be in Mongolia for maybe a couple of years. I didn't know. And so I hadn't really thought all of that through. This organization called Lucky Paws, they rescued her. She had this gruesome cut around her neck. Somebody had tied her to a post in the street with this metal wire. And so she had a cut about an inch and a half deep all the way around her neck. And she was incredibly shy and she looked really sad. I went to this vet where I heard you could adopt dogs and I saw Molly and she reminded me of my old border collie. Although she was so unplayful and just really, really timid, understandably. But I decided to get her and took her back to this kind of underground sort of basement that I was living in. And then about 5 months later, Tommy said he was getting married. And so that sort of sorted out my plans for me. Because originally I was thinking about carrying on east and going off from the eastern corner of Russia to the Americas and to go down from Alaska to the bottom of South America.
That would have been quite tame, frankly.
Well, that was really the plan. I wasn't quite ready to come back. But
Emma, just the fact of getting all the documents and the paperwork to bring a dog all the way back.
Yeah, it took a long time.
From Mongolia to England.
Yeah.
It's quite a feat.
I'm so pleased it all worked out, though, because when he said he was getting married and I realised I was going to be driving home, I was manically trying to work out how I could get Molly on the bike. When I first adopted her, I did remember thinking to myself, there's no way in hell that she could ever travel with me and Gretel. She was just so scared. She'd barely move anywhere. You know, she'd sort of dig her paws in and just sort of stand there. And just slowly, slowly, she became more playful, more easy. I bought her a little bag that was going to go on Gretel's back seat. And first we'd just try hop in the bag and she'd sort of jump in, but it would be on the ground. And then gradually I'd put the bag on Gretel and Molly would jump in. She uses my knee as a springboard and she hops in. And she was absolutely fine. We started on small little spins around sort of back roads. I didn't dare take her onto the main roads until I knew she was all right. But I tried all sorts. First, I tried having her on my lap and I couldn't really steer. And then got the bag and tried her on the back, which meant I couldn't have any luggage. But that was just one thing I sort of had to sacrifice when I got Moll. And so... and then it was getting all her documents sorted out, which I found this really amazing vet in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, and she said it would take 5 months. Luckily, I had about 5 months. I was doing a job there. I was teaching part-time, doing some art.
And then you set off.
Then I set off straight away.
On your Vespa with your little dog.
Yes, with Mom on the back.
A long drive back to England.
Yeah, it was great having a passenger.
But you didn't come back the same route. You went through Siberia.
Yes, no, different route home. Actually, a much easier route home. The way out was...
More of a straight line, in a way.
On the way home, yeah, if I look at it on a map, it's sort of a real beeline. Ulaanbaatar to Dorset. But yeah, no, it was a long drive home. But when I think about it, it took me 16 months to get out there and it took me 6 weeks to get back, which could have actually been 4 weeks quite easily.
Oh, that's pretty good. Better roads then coming
oh, yeah,
back?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
You must have had some funny looks, though. People saw
we
you,
did. I mean, we
you
got...
this girl
yeah.
on this beaten-up Vespa with a small
true.
Dog sitting in a special sort of harness and a backpack.
Yes,
behind you.
No, we did. I mean, I got a lot of odd looks, even when Molly wasn't on the back. But with her on the back, yeah, it was quite amusing, actually. No, she did great. It was fantastic having her on the back. I think she really enjoyed it as well. I could see her in my wing mirror, sort of ears flapping about in the wind, intrigued, watching the world go by.
So you eventually made it back here, no problem at all.
Got back in
time for your brother's wedding?
Yes, yeah, in good time for my brother's wedding. The main bulk of it, the worry was getting through Russia because Russia was a 30-day visa and it's 7,000 kilometres. So I had literally not a day to spare. So there were blizzards and snowstorms most of the way through Siberia. And we just had to kind of keep going. So Molly had a little travel jacket and a waterproof. And I remember at one point we just couldn't see anything because, the snow was coming. And this is because my helmet doesn't have a visor. So I had this pair of goggles. It's Mum's old helmet. It's really quite vintage. And I had this pair of goggles and they'd missed up and I couldn't see a thing. So I stopped in this old unused station. And I thought I'd wait for the blizzard to pass. And I just got out my sandwich. And then this really vicious-looking wild dog came out from behind a shed and started growling and circling us. And I was thinking, oh, God, I had this choice. Do I choose the dog, the wild dog and eaten to death at gas pump, or blizzard? So I went for the blizzard. But I just remember that feeling of finally getting... out of the snow, out of Siberia within the 30 days was such a relief. I couldn't believe it when I crossed the border into Latvia. I almost sort of, you know, questioned the guy that let me through the gates. I said, so wait, I'm actually here and Molly's here and Gretel's here. So getting into Europe was a massive relief.
And Gretel was okay about all this?
Gretel was on fine form. Yeah, she didn't have a single issue actually the whole way home, which I was really amazed about. Apart from, you know, a couple of flat tires and things like that. So,
and then when you got to Italy, you had an interesting encounter with an Italian policeman, I gather.
Oh yeah, he was great. Yeah, that was funny. I got caught on the motorway. I never know if I'm allowed on the motorway. And
in a Vespa.
On a Vespa, yeah. I went on the motorway and I was approached by the sort of gang of bikers stopped, sort of all, you know, big chaps, leather clad. And one of them came over to me and asked if my bike was allowed there. And I said, well, I'm not really sure, but so far it's been all right. And the guy said, well, maybe you should ask the officer. And I said, I was thinking to myself, why on earth would I go and ask the police if I'm allowed? And I noticed there was a guy, a policeman, looking at Gretel, a bit sort of confused. Molly was sort of in the back. And and he asked for, you know, documents and all of this. And he said, no, this bike's not allowed on the motorway. And then he was looking through his booklet of fines and fishing out the number that I was going to have to pay. He sort of pointed to the figure. I can't remember what it was, but it was quite a lot. And I said, I'm really sorry, but I really, really don't have any money to pay you. And I'm on my way home. And he said, well, first he asked me how I had afforded the gas and all things like that. But when I told him the trip that I'd come on, I said, well, actually, I've come from Mongolia and I'm just on my way back home. And I've got the dog on the back, very little money to get home. And he went and conferred with his colleague, came back, gave me a massive kiss on both cheeks, gave me a big hug and said, ciao, Emma. But no, they were very nice. They offered to sort of escort me off the motorway. And then I think I went and got a coffee. They got a bit bored and said goodbye. But I've had a few encounters like that with the Italian police. They're quite funny.
I think it's time to meet Gretel.
So now we're going to meet the famous Gretel, Gretel the intrepid Vespa, the other heroine of the story. And here she is in the shed. Oh, sort of slightly faded lime green here, Emma. Just a wee bit beaten up. Not surprising after what she's been through.
Yes, you could say that. Yeah. No, I think she speaks for herself, really.
She's amazing. Now, did you work out how many miles or kilometres you'd actually done on her all the way to Mongolia and back?
I've been working in kilometres. So I think it was about 16,000 on the way out and about 13,000 on the way back. Probably a few thousand around cities and in between. But her speedometer and mileage broke after the crash in Istanbul, so I'm a bit... had to work it all out on maps in the end.
that's amazing, isn't it? Because normally a little bike like this would just sort of go putting around towns and things like that in this country or in her home country of Italy.
Yes, I was told that. I was told mainly by my father bikes are designed to go around towns.
And Emma, yeah, I see you've got here this kind of woven... What is it?
It's sort of two Uzbek tapestries. I got them in one of those big temples in Samarkand. There was a little market in the courtyard and they were selling these. They're quite faded now, but I thought they looked quite smart.
So you sat on those on your saddle all the way to Ulaanbaatar and back again?
Yes, exactly.
And I see you've got a couple of little trinkets attached to them. It's a plastic camel And any significance to these?
Or they're not picked up from around the boat.
Talismans,
some of them
they?
Were presents. This wolf tooth is from my landlord in Mongolia.
A wolf tooth?
Yeah, it's quite cool.
Oh, look at that. A bit worn. I don't think that would do you much damage if it bit you, would it?
Some things from beaches, general.
Oh, and Mickey Mouse.
And Mickey Mouse, of course, yeah. Yeah.
And what did you keep then? And this is your saddle?
Top box.
What's this?
Your
tuck box.
Top box, sorry.
Top box.
Most luggage really in there. Sleeping bag,
was it?
You managed to get a sleeping bag in there. But you also camped, didn't you? You had a tent.
I camped pretty much the whole
way,
yeah.
You didn't get a tent in there, did you?
No, originally I had the tent on the back, but then when I adopted Molly, she took up all my luggage space. So I had to fashion I've got a little tie that comes around here. So the tent was
at the front.
Tent perched at the front, yeah.
So, and you just had room for your legs then?
Well, yeah, only just. I had a bag hanging here as well. And so, a little bit of a squash at times, but I didn't carry much.
You must have looked like a biking gypsy.
Yeah, more or less, I think. Gretel became my home. But she's great, you know, she's got a good size seat. We stop and have picnics on her. And I think if I'd had a big sports bike with a sort of narrow seat, it might have been more difficult to take Molly on the bag.
So how about then, Emma, getting Molly to jump up on the bike as she would have been on the drive back from that little wee drive from Mongolia to England?
Yes, I think she's begging to get on the bike. Okay, Mol, ready? Wait. Okay, Mol, hop in the bag. Mol, hop in the bag. Good girl. Sit. Good girl.
So she gets a little treat for doing that.
Yes, usually. I've got chicken.
It's sort of like home for home for her.
Gets chicken or digestive biscuit usually as a special treat. But come on, Pepsi.
But did she have to have... you had goggles to protect your eyes from the wind. Did she have to have something?
Oh, wow, Molly, she's never done that before.
Did she have to have goggles or something?
No, because I got most of the wind, which was the great thing about having her on the back. That's what I was worried about when I tried her on my lap, was that she'd get very cold. So she'd wear this. Molly, off you go. Molly, down. Oh, no, it's not there. She's got a little waterproof jacket, which she wears, and she doesn't get much wind, so... she can sort of snuggle up if she wants to, but usually I see her with her sort of head on my shoulder, kind of looking out at everything.
She loved it, did she?
I actually think she really enjoyed it, because what I was really worried about was that she might absolutely hate it. And so I couldn't believe it, firstly, when she just hopped on. And, I think she really enjoys it. Every time I start Gretel up nowadays to go anywhere, she gets incredibly cross if I leave her behind. When we had the wedding here, I was taking some friends for lifts up the lane. And I suddenly noticed Molly was sort of sprinting behind us, trying to catch up, because they were taking her seat, Mol, weren't they? But I think she really enjoyed it. So it was a great trip back. Bit taxing sharing the tent for 2 months, but we got through that.
Emma, you're not going to retire Gretel now, I hope.
Never, no, I'll still be chugging along at 90 on Gretel.
Well, in the meantime, Emma, will Gretel start up for us, do you think?
I'm not sure. She's been a bit iffy recently. She's not feeling that well, but we'll see. Just. There we are. Big girl. There we are. She's a bit tired, I think, at the moment. Sometimes in the morning, she needs a bit of time to wake up. We'll just bring her out here. It's only a recent thing. Apparently, I've got something a little wrong with my starter. So we're off to the mechanic today to fix that in. Needs a bit of warming up sometimes. Mol? But my mechanic down here was pleased to see her in Bridport. I remember telling him, I'm off, I'm driving to India. And when I got back here, I think I called him from Kyrgyzstan, obviously, because he was the one that cleaned up the second-hand engine and sent bits out. So he was super pleased to see her again.
She used to bring Gretel in here just for servicing and general maintenance. And I've got to say, she's past her prime.
So how old is the bike?
It's quite old. I imagine it's over 10 years old. So it's not a modern, good condition bike, by her own admittance. So she went abroad on a bike which is basically good 10 years old, pretty scruffy, on a whim. And she's done it. It's amazing.
I do think she had the luck of the devil. And I wouldn't wish many other parents to go through it. That's not to say that we both don't have huge pride and in her achievement, and thank goodness for intrepid people who take no notice of good advice. The world would be a boring and less colourful place without them. But if you're a parent of one, that's not to say that it's not very high in anxiety level.
But you were able to go and check up on her, because you actually flew out to Mongolia, didn't you, to pay her a visit?
Claire and I went in April 2016, and I went again in April this year. And, she learned a hell of a lot and had an interesting time. They're not all of it enjoyable, Ulaanbaatar. I don't think it's somewhere you go to have a great time, but she had a very interesting and rewarding time, I think, and learnt a lot.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, her 2 years from leaving to returning have completely transformed her, and she's fantastically competent at finding her way about and hugely brave. I mean, I'm afraid she does not get that from me. I would no sooner just pitch my tent in a dark forest and sleep the night. Then I just can't imagine. I mean, that's more your thing, isn't it, Bunch?
No, well, I think we both have huge respect for her intrepid nature. Of course we do.
Yes.
And it's an extraordinary story.
I mean, we are incredibly proud of her because, as I say, it's something I could never have in a million years even considered doing myself. Far too much of a coward. And she has no fear in that sense, which to me is remarkable. And she has total faith in humanity. To her, people are basically good. And I think that's fantastic.
Do you think, Claire, that actually communicated itself to the people she met, which is why they took her under their wing and looked after her and were so hospitable and kind?
Very much so. I think you can. I think she gives off an aura of trust and a belief in things, and I think it's repaid. And I do think that is quite a lesson in life. You, I know some people would really disagree with this, but I would rather trust somebody and occasionally be disappointed than have a lot of mistrust and never have anything go wrong.
Do you know, it strikes me that what your daughter has just done kind of falls into line with those extraordinary exploits of women in the Victorian era or earlier or the beginning of the last century, who would just head off on these amazing journeys all by themselves and just an extraordinary spirit.
It's true. One thinks of Gertrude Bell and people like that who just go off and they make their own lives. They make their own way. Nobody's done it before them. Although people have done this trip.
But perhaps not in the way that Emma did it.
No.
Especially not returning on Gretel through the blizzards and so on of Siberia with a small dog perched behind her.
Really, it is such an insane idea.
That is.
And we did actually suggest, slightly tongue-in-cheek, that she would sell Gretel and Molly in Ulaanbaatar and buy new ones here. It would be so much quicker. But then we had the
same. I bet that went down like a lead balloon.
Went down like a lead. Oh, mama, for heaven's sake. The best bit was when she came back up the drive after her 2 year stint, and we heard a boop boop. It was Gretel's ridiculous horn. And we just, Toad Hall sprang to mind. You know, look at me, I'm back, and I've succeeded, and there's Molly's on the back, and we just thought, thank God. Because that last bit, the sort of 6 hours that it took from landing in England, and she has to avoid motorways, so everything takes ages. So that sort of bit, that last bit of waiting, we were just thinking, God, let's hope nothing happens now at the last minute. But, you know, of course, she arrived happily and safely, and we're all completely thrilled to see her back.
She's already told me her next escapade is going to be Africa. So a new chapter starts. How the hell she does this and keeps, you know, the danger, the loneliness. I mean, she's been in the Gobi Desert and it's been snowing. You know, this girl's been through all sorts. I think she's been mugged. Everything. She's had motorcycle crashes out there. She's one amazing lady, like I say. And it takes, you know, excuse the language, but balls to do that. And, I wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So hats off to her.
And what do you feel about that little bike now?
I think she's going to have to put it in a glass cabinet one day and have it buried with her, because how could you sell a bike what's done that? You know, I mean, it looks very scruffy. When you see it and you see a relationship with this bike, it is one of those bikes you couldn't sell. So, like I say, I think that will be buried with her one day.
Beep, beep. And that was the portrait artist and truly adventurous traveller Emma Trenchard and her parents Claire and Johnny and Bridport bike mechanic Clive Thorner. Like Claire, I'd never have the courage to do what Emma did. So this is Jenny Devitt here on Abbey 104 with Local World saying bye-bye and see you next week.